Everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 103. This is a show where we just kind of talk about the life in a tech. You know, what do we do? How do we do it? How do we succeed? Where do we fail? I'm your host, Martin Obando from Obando Computing. Tonight, we are all here. It's full house. We have Tim Baumeister, Mitch Heyman, and our special guest, Fred Gaines, is joining us. So we'll start with him. Hey, Fred, how's it going?
I am doing wonderful, Martin. Thank you for asking.
I know you're not really our guest. You spearheaded this Geeksters. You've been here the whole time, but it's nice to see you. You're back. I know your work sometimes doesn't allow you to join us. But like I said, I know we're all grateful that you're back, at least for today.
Yeah, at least for today. I'm in Chicago tonight, which, by the way, it's very, very cold, just so you know.
Are we supposed to say, how cold is it?
I don't know how cold it is. No. It was a blizzard, I know, last night when we got here.
But, and you flew in to that?
Yeah.
Winter wipers on high?
Yeah.
Do you have different restrictions than a regular airline, you know?
Like a real airline?
You know, I mean, a regular, you're a private company. I mean, do you have any different restrictions?
Well, we're actually not a private. We are an air carrier, but it's just we're called an unscheduled air carrier, mm-hmm. or non-scheduled air carrier. And so there are different rules and apply, but for all practical purposes, they're about the same. But there are some that can go lower visibility.
There's all kinds of delays at BWI, well, up and down the Eastern Seaboard right now.
Yeah, I guess it's hitting over there right now. Mm-hmm. So,
well, cool. I'm glad you're here with us, Fred. Now, I got your name. Today, you will be Fred. You are the only Fred in the show today. And if you go back to listen to last week's episode, I called everybody Fred.
PC, I listened to that. That was really funny. I had a chuckle.
Man, I had such a hard time with that. So, I'm glad you're here. And to his, I guess his left, our right, would be Mitch. Hey, Mitch, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we are getting that blizzard. Well, we're supposed to get like 6 to 10 inches of snow, but the main thing is the wind and the cold. So, but we're managing.
Yeah. It's been, I mean, I showed you guys pictures of today. So being in the Pacific Northwest, it's been, it was maybe 50 degrees today, sunny, blue skies. We did have over in the Columbia Gorge, 107 mile an hour winds though.
Whoa.
So ripping right through the canyon there. Council Crest, which is a beautiful, kind of a, I don't know, looks like kind of like a museum. It sits right on the Columbia River. And so right across the river, of course, is the state of Washington. And it's just beautiful, beautiful through there. Multnomah Falls and a whole bunch of falls. But it sits at the very top. So you can look at the whole gorge, and they were reporting, 100 mile an hour plus winds up there. I don't know how cold they were, but I hear about winds through the gorge all the time, but I've never been there during 107 mile an hour winds. I'd bring a kite or a pinwheel.
Yeah, isn't that like the kite surfing capital of the world there?
Was that what capital?
Isn't that like one of the kite surfing capitals there on the Columbia River there?
Yeah, right off the gorge. Actually, you can sit on Council Crest and watch all the kite surfers down below.
Yeah. Bring a wetsuit.
And a drag parachute. They get blown all the way out to the Pacific Ocean.
Hey, that looks like Honolulu.
Keep going. And we got Tim. Hey, Tim, how's it going?
I cannot see my house from here. I'm doing all right, man. It's really, really cold here as well.
Are you snowbound as well? Or
no, I didn't get the snow so much. I didn't really track that storm. It must have blown up the East Coast, because I know that Mitch was getting it, and Steve D was talking about there in New York. We got an inch or two, but it's just really cold. I think they're calling for 9 degrees overnight. So
that's like a heat wave from a couple weeks ago, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that doesn't help, especially coming from somebody talking about being 50 something degrees today or whatever.
It is. Yeah, I don't know what that feels like. I mean, we had it cold, but yeah. But it gets like 68 in the house, and I was like, brr, it's cold in here.
Well, you think about it, it's like, if you're 50 degrees and you know, here it was 9 below. I mean, the delta is 59. So, you know, imagine it going from what it is at your place to 109.
Right.
That you can imagine. You'd be like, oh, okay, well, that I can feel that. I can imagine that. Yeah, that 9 below, that was a trip. So, yeah, you're right. 9 above, we'll survive.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, bring some of that this way. We get snow kind of later on in the year here sometimes. So January is usually right around the time, but now it's getting towards the end of January, and there's nothing in sight. Like, the mountains aren't getting very much snow, and it's kind of been a bad winter over here in the Pacific Northwest for snowboarders and skiers up on the mountain. So, But hey, you know what? It is what it is. A couple years ago, it was all nasty. So who knows what next year will hold. So Fred, it's nice of you to join us. It's good to see you here. What kind of stuff you've been working on?
Well, you know, honestly, I haven't been doing much, unfortunately. I've got a couple projects at home that are, I call them ongoing, but which means I just am too lazy to start them. But
still in the playing stages.
Yeah.
I stare at perfection.
I look over at them every now and then and go, yeah, you know what? First thing I need to do is unzip that bag and pull that laptop up out of there. Yep, that's what I'm going to do, by golly.
Well, I moved it closer to my desk. What more do you want?
You know, I've been doing a little bit of web work. I've been, I've been working on a website for a friend. And also on my website that I've been kind of put the back burner here last week or so. And then I did do a my sister-in-law calls me. What was the last awards thing they had like a week ago? It was like, was it like Academy Awards or something?
Not the Academy Awards. It was the Oscars.
Oscars. There you go.
No, it wasn't
Oscars. It wasn't the Oscars.
But it was one of those pre-shows.
Golden Globes. Before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
One of those.
That's the three I know right there.
So it was that. Well, she doesn't have cable or satellite, so she thought it would be a really good idea to just Google search streaming, you know, whatever. So, of course, we all know what happens when one does that. One ends up infected every which way but Tuesday, and, of course, she did. So she's like, fortunately, she was able to, I was able to remote in, because she lives over in Virginia. I was able to remote in and get access in safe mode, and... So I get in there and I look at her desktop and they had put all this stuff like speed up my PC was one of them. I really meant to take notes on this, but I forgot. And just a few other things. Well, it was acting really strange. It was like I ran malware bytes on it for out of the chute and didn't come up with anything. I ran Hitman Pro. It came up with nothing. Then what did I do next? Can't remember. So then I ran, Junkware Removal Tool, and it didn't do anything. So then I ran ADW Cleaner, and guess what? ADW Cleaner cleaned the whole mess out.
Nice.
I mean, got rid of all the desktop icons. The browser was completely hijacked, which I did clear myself, but that didn't fix it. So ADW Cleaner for the win. I mean,
yep.
It really impressed me with that because I've always had better luck with JRT.
But you normally use both of them anyway, don't you?
Yeah,
no, I do.
Yeah, but generally speaking, JRT just gets rid of all kinds of stuff, and ADW Cleaner just does a few little things. But man, I'll tell you, I was thoroughly impressed with its performance on that job, and it saved me a lot of time, you know, trying to go in there and find all that stuff manually. So,
and I've never used ADW Cleaner. I hear you guys mention it, but yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I wasn't until just the other day where I actually thought, well, let me give, you know, Junkware Removal Tool a try, and I was surprised by that because the one thing that took me back on Junkware Removal Tool was the fact that it goes through and it resets all your IE settings for you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty slick because that's the, you know, you can remove the malware and stuff pretty easy. It's going back and making everything look right because it's already added, you know, 13 different toolbars, 26 different search engines, and then redirects you to, you know, couponcodesrs.com.
I had the same issue too. My neighbor, elderly couple, they're like 88 years old, really sharp. They're doing well. And Charlie calls me up, I guess it was Tuesday or Wednesday, and same. He was a problem. Yeah, and just same thing. And he what started his? He was trying to activate a credit card online, and he installed what I thought was some malware, but and I can't remember. It was like Truster Endpoint, which is it was legit. But he didn't do it knowingly, you know, on purpose. And then he had that same stuff like what Fred mentioned on his desktop. So I did all that, you know, JWT and Adware Cleaner, you know, Hitman Pro and all that, Malware Bytes, and it cleaned it up. But Chrome was not working right. And what I like to do, I say it's not a big deal, uninstall and reinstall it. And even after I uninstalled it, it still had its program files in here. It would not let me remove that folder. And it's the second time or third time I ran into this. I have to get that program, that unlocker program, that gives me rights to, I mean, you could do it manually. So I deleted that, but I tried to reinstall it. And this is the first time I ever ran into that, trying to reinstall it on Chrome. It would not let me do it. And the fix was for that was I had to go into the registry and, you know, local HKEY local user software, Google. I had to delete that one and the other one for all users. As soon as I deleted both those in the registry, then it installed fine from there.
You couldn't install Chrome.
No, it wouldn't. No, it stopped. It would error out, and I can't
remember. Really?
Yeah. On downloading. Yeah.
Interesting.
So it was. I probably ran into that like two or three times, but this is the first time that I had to remove the remarks and the registry to get it to install. So, but it was good. It's fine. It was running real good. It was a Vista machine too. And I think it's some of the stuff is more prone to Vista, I think.
By any chance, did you run CCleaner? And I'm wondering if yes. CCleaner. Okay. All right.
I like to run CCleaner because I like the registry part of it too.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if it would have caught it, and apparently not.
CCleaner, you got to run that manually. So I told him, he was thinking about go ahead and buying Malware Bytes, the full version, so it runs in the background. I said it's certainly not going to hurt, and it's cheap enough, even if you have to buy it every year.
Well, no, it's lifetime one price for $25. I mean, really, you can't. It's hard to go wrong with that.
Do they have a one price? I thought it was.
It's $24.95 one time. So that makes it.
It's definitely worth it.
It's kind of hard to beat that one. Now, when you guys run CCleaner, especially for the registry, do you run it and then clean it out and then run it again?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you guys keep running it until it says there's nothing, because exactly. Some things are dependent on other things, and then you kind of as you go along.
Okay. I'll run it. Sometimes you might have to run it three or four times in a row before it comes up clean, and that's normal. Yeah.
I just was asking because it does. You know, you can get 117 things the first scan and then 30 the next, and just curious if you go on with it.
Do you save your backups?
I have been, just in case.
I've never had to use it, but I always save them.
No. Actually, I've had to use it once, and it was because CCleaner thought a system utility, whether I can't remember if it was a Dell or an HP or something like that, something that they wanted, whether it's the HP toolbar or something, you know, one of those built-in tools, they wanted that, and CCleaner saw it and removed it. So I had to go back in, restore the registry, reboot the computer, and then it started back up, and then go back in and then select all again in CCleaner, and then go through and just find that and uncheck those things. But it's only happened one time, and it really kind of caught me off guard, and I'm glad I saved my backup.
It seems like a pretty unique situation, though.
It really was. I was kind of taken back by it, and ever since then, I've saved it, especially on a computer if I'm working on it. I'll save them. I'll work or continue working on the computer. I'll reboot it a couple times, make sure everything's fine, and then I may or may not delete it after that, depending on how, you know, if it's a single computer, if I'm making an image of a computer to push out to multiple computers, I may not even keep those backups after I've rebooted it many times, just to make sure that everything is working correctly after that.
I run with reckless abandon as usual. I never make a backup copy.
Hey, I did. Oh, go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and that's it's not as if something broke with CCleaner. It just did what it does.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very unusual circumstance where that just happened to be something that you actually would have wanted to keep. So
I've used Malware Bytes before. And I let it clean something it found, and the machine wouldn't boot up afterwards.
Actually, it was I bet that was a long time ago.
No, it was a couple years ago. It was a netbook. And Brian was helping me, and I said, "Well, let me try." And nothing was working. Well, let me try the, you know, it was pretty sure it was a Windows 7 machine, and Starter Edition, whatever. I had to rebuild the, you know, the bootloader, BC Edit thing, and once I did that, it was fine, and it was clean.
But I did want to mention, I looked at your webpage, your speed, and I lost it. What is it? Jet Speed It.
It's JetSpeed IT.
Sorry, okay? JetSpeed IT.
They won't let you put a space in the URL. I'm sorry.
You can put an underscore. No, you can put a space.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah. Anyways, you may want to register that. I'm going to go register right now. Anyways, it looks really good. No, it looks really good, Fred. I wanted to throw that out there. It's coming along really well.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. Hey, speaking of malware bytes, have you guys been getting like your standard viruses in lately where malware bytes is finding anything? Because last few months, malware bytes hasn't found anything that I've been working on. So maybe it's just because it's been more browser stuff. I don't know.
They found a ton on my neighbors and
did it,
and at work on my one of my boss's machines.
All right, I guess it's just the stuff that I've been seeing. Of course, I don't see very much, but what I have in the last couple months, I've run malware bytes, and it never comes up with anything, yet still infected with something. And I didn't know maybe if they were kind of resting on their laurels or what.
That's why you use the other stuff that you mentioned, JWT and...
No, I use them all, but I just...
And Hitman
Pro. Used to be I'd run malware bytes, and it would generally do all the hard work. See,
I don't trust anyone alone, and who knows... If something else that you don't use may find something, so
right.
Well, and that's the problem with being, you know, if the more people who talk about malware bytes and the kind of the bigger it gets and the more popular it seems to get, it seems that then people will figure out ways to go around it. So now the most popular device can't find anything because people have already sidestepped it. So right. we just need to not talk about it anymore.
About what?
About exactly.
And hence why you got the people say hey, you can't clean a virus. You have to do a...
Martin, you have D7, right?
I do. I don't use it very often, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, I've been trying to mess around with it, too, because you were talking about, you know, like CCleaner. You know, D7 will do all this, you know, all that stuff. CCleaner does.
Yeah.
And, I wish Nick would make a good video on how to really... To really tweak that, set that thing up to where it works, because I've tried and I just failed.
Well, you know, I know that Liam has really been tweaking with it and getting it set up correctly, and I've been wanting to get him to come on the show, so maybe we'll get Liam to come on the show and maybe he can do a little tutorial of setting up D7 with us.
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd be really cool. Because, I mean, it seems like the tool to use. I just don't see, you know, it does it all. It does all the stuff that these little individual programs do.
Right.
But it does it all within one shell.
Well, yeah, CCleaner's in there, Malwarebytes is in there. You can start adding things like your AW or ADW cleaner. You can add it all into one application and take one thumb drive with you and have a single interface. But I haven't worked with it very much, so.
Yes, but do you have the official?
Oh, yeah, I do. It's over downstairs. I do. I had it before you did, actually.
Oh, yeah, but was it hand-delivered?
No, it was not hand-delivered by all.
Mine was hand-delivered and autographed by Nick Shaw.
See, I have one. Yours was blessed. That's why mine doesn't work.
Well, that's why it sits on the shelf, right, Fred? You're trying to protect the autograph for... don't take it out of the box, whatever you do.
If you'll notice, it's a bottle opener. And you'll also notice that it's bent, so you can tell what it's been used for.
Probably pry open airplane doors.
Hey, this is a thumb drive, huh?
Oh, mercy.
No, that's cool. That's cool. So, Mitch, you've been... I can't remember if I already asked you if you've been working on stuff. Kind of been all over the place here.
Me, Mitch?
Yeah, you, Mitch.
Just what neighbor. I mentioned a minute ago, my neighbor, 88-year-old neighbor's... infected PC. And then for myself, you know, I like to play around with Linux here and there, and I'm messing around with this distro called Manjaro or Manjaro, I don't know.
Manjaro
Linux, which is based off of Arch. And the difference, Arch is this huge long command line install you have to do. With this, it's got a GUI installer, and it takes all of like 5 minutes to install it. And after that, it's pretty much like Arch, regular Arch to me, except it, I believe it uses its own repositories. I like it. You know, I had some issues with getting updates or installing programs. I got that straightened out last night. And it's real light. I have it on a Core 2 Quad, which is an older technology. And it's running quick, and it really shuts down. Like the machine I'm on now, it's just got a solid state drive in there. And I see a difference booting up and shutting down. Well, on this old machine, which I have an IDE drive in there with that Manjaro, it shuts down instantaneously. You know, shut it down, it just shuts down really quick.
You realize it's a shutdown command, not just pulling the power, right?
Yeah, halt, H-A-L-T. Now, but I'm going through the...
Well, you're like, it shuts down really fast when I unplug it.
Yeah, that will definitely work real well. No, it just works good. It's fun.
That's cool. Yeah, I've installed it once before on a VM just to look at it, play with it for a little bit. I had to use the space again, so it went away, but it was fun just to install it on a VM and take a look at it.
But I still may... I don't have nothing against Ubuntu and everything, but I really do think when you mess around with these kind of more difficult distros, you kind of learn where things are placed. And I mean, I'm not real good with the command line. Like I was telling you, I couldn't download programs and install it, but I could have probably done it manually. You know, we have to extract it and sh it or whatever. You know, and which I'm not good on. I always have to look at my notes on air. But I got that fixed.
Cool. That's really cool. Tim, you've been anything exciting on your end?
Well, we continue in the vein of people bringing things that are completely destroyed. you know, it's
a box.
Right around the holidays and that. Like I said before, it's people are busy. They got things going on. Maybe getting a little short on cash, especially this time of year. And so, you know, work that can be deferred is deferred. And so, in my experience, I tend to see stuff that has to be fixed. That, you know, that just can't wait. And so, once again, more busted up cell phones, broken screens, and that. I had a laptop come in that was a college student home from school, and like 3 days before he was to go back, he informed his mother that something had sizzled inside the laptop, and now the only way to connect the internet was with the wireless. So
I'm not sure sizzling and laptop are good. Those words should never be put together.
No, you know, I like sizzling with my steak, and I like not sizzling with my laptop. That's right.
If your laptop smells like steak, there's a problem.
That's right. You don't sell the laptop, you sell the sizzle.
You want your laptop rare.
You sell the sizzle.
So anyway, I got it here, and I didn't even bother to tear it down. I did spend some time trying to determine if it was hardware or software. Once again, the basic stuff, boot up in a live Linux disk. It doesn't. Wireless, I picked up the wireless fine. It didn't seem to detect that there was any kind of Ethernet adapter available. I also did boot up in Ultimate Boot CD for Windows, and once again, it didn't detect that there was any kind of a hardware thing. You know, in the Resident OS, Windows 7, you know, I tried searching for devices and all this sort of thing, and so it gave every indication that the onboard NIC was indeed done, and so yeah,
sizzle.
And so easy fix, you know. It was we're off to Best Buy, and for $40, got a really nice USB 3.0 network adapter, and so plugs right in with the wireless. Connect with internet connectivity using the wireless. It did search and detect to find drivers and install them automatically. Disabled the wireless, plugged in the Ethernet cable, and boom, back on the road. So, you know, it was really important because, you know, in these dorms and that, or I don't know if it's if everywhere on campus or if it's in the dorms or just the dorms or what, but, you know, the only means of connecting is hardwired on a lot of campuses. So the without a NIC, the kid was he was in a lot of trouble with that hardwired connection. So yeah, that was the first time I really kind of messed with the with any. That's something I should probably wish I'd had. A couple times I've heard folks talk about it, and I really could have used one, a USB adapter for network adapter, hardwired network adapter. So, but yeah, I mean, installed easy enough and worked perfectly. And with the USB 3.0, it was the speed on it was 10, 100, 1000. So,
hey, Tim, real fast, it was just a USB wired connection, right? That's what you got, not a wireless, right?
Right, not wireless. It was not a wireless adapter, and that was the issue at the store. You know, I go in there, and I couldn't find what I was looking for, even though I knew they had two or three different models in store available.
What store was that?
Best Buy.
Okay, yeah.
And then
you find a lot online. I mean, I used it before, but I tell you, the one I have that used to work, it works well in XP. It does not work in this Windows 7, I don't believe.
No updated driver.
No, and I don't know where it is, but I think I have another one.
Yeah.
But they really come in handy, because I had those issues too, which you mentioned, with the onboard, you know, NIC going up.
Yeah, from a diagnostic, you know, it does have some diagnostic value to have it on the bench if you're trying to, you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with the NIC itself. There's something broken in Windows. It doesn't allow the install. Who knows, you know. But that was the fix. It was an easy fix. But, yeah, I was asking the guy, Frank, tell him this is what I want. I know they have one. And he couldn't quite wrap his mind around it. And they had it in a weird place, too. They didn't have them near, all the wireless adapters and everything where I thought they would be. They were actually hanging near just, like, all the different, basically just the cables, all the different
random stuff.
Yeah, basically every cable that connects one cable to another cable, you know, so all the various random adapters and crap, they were in that area. And so he did help me find them. Then once he saw it, he was like, oh, he said, okay, I get this. All right. It was an easy fix, and it was that. And then I also had, speaking of that, ADW. I was trying to remember that because I wish I had. I was halfway through a job and I thought, I wish I had run that, because I had a machine come in and she said it was slow. And this is, I don't know, 6 year old, probably Dell, running Vista. And the specs are adequate, but you wouldn't expect that machine to run very well anyway. And then it was loaded. There must have been 7 toolbars loaded on it. And, you know, and so it had the Yahoo and the Google and the Ask, you know, so all the crap that you kind of collect anyway, if you're installing Flash and not paying attention, but then it also was loaded up with the search conduit, and then like all the crap that can now come to your computer through the giant conduit, the crap conduit that's now installed. And it's like, no wonder it's
the conduit train. Slow.
The conduit train. And I'll tell you what, to answer Freddy's question from earlier about Malwarebytes, you know, Malwarebytes is still kind of my go-to. However, I am kind of surprised recently by a few times where it didn't catch things where I thought it should have. And so I don't know if that's just where, you know, it's a tennis match. Sometimes the bad guys get a little bit of a leg up. Sometimes the good guys do. And so I don't know if we're at that point or if my experience was unique. But I still run it, and I'm thinking that not because it's not a bad tool, but I'm a little bit more diligent in running a second product just to make sure. And so, you know, I doubled up Malwarebytes with Kaspersky rescue disk, which is fantastic, but you know, following up with something that Liam had spoke to us, you know, us earlier in the week, is that this scan takes forever. I don't remember how
it does.
I don't remember the scan taking so long, but
I
this really
Because Wersky's always taking a long time.
Yeah, it's
Slow. I mean, there was probably, you know, there was 40 gigs on here, like total, including the OS and everything. And this was calling for 8 hours. This was an 8-hour scan it was calling for.
Well, you know, because Wersky does have a Windows utility. You can run that, too, instead of doing that, you know, the live CD. Well, that would definitely be a lot quicker. So.
Really? Running Windows would be faster?
I mean, if you're able to... Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to be way faster than this. Anything's going to be... Windows is going to be way... If it's clean, you know. But they have... Go on their site. They have a utility that you install in Windows, and you can run stuff from there. It'll clean some stuff, too.
Interesting. I like the live disk because...
sometimes you don't have a choice.
Well, in this... The machine was... I felt like the machine was, like, running well, but I didn't get the feeling that it was fixed. I still felt like there was something running. And I kind of like the live disk because it's going to, you know, it's going to read the boot sectors and it's going to load, you know, if there's a Trojan or something that's running, you know, loads before Windows. And so, and I have a feeling that let's hear anything about the malware bytes. I'm afraid that I cleaned it. And I think after rebooting, I think that this thing kind of repopulated itself a little bit. So,
You know, Tim, when I did it, when I was doing it a good bit, a few years ago, I would never feel safe if I didn't run four or five things like two or three times. When three to five things or whatever I ran came up clean like two or three times, I felt, and I didn't feel safe until I did that. I mean, it's just, you know, you want to give it back and the tech guy in the chat room, C-Tech guy. Yeah. And I would still use that even though I don't think it's as good as it used to be, the Super AntiSpyware. I would still run that too.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that was my go-to. That, you know, my process, it was always Malwarebytes and Super AntiSpyware.
Right.
And the order in which I run them was kind of depending on what I was working on. I always felt that maybe one product was a little bit better at than the other at certain things. Exactly. And then it came the day that Super AntiSpyware was no longer good at doing much of anything, and that product went bad fast. And I don't know, maybe it's back now. I don't know, but
the company that bought them out was a computer. It was a remote software company that bought them out. I forgot the name, computer something. Yeah, they kind of went downhill when they bought them. But I would still use it.
They don't. I never had any luck with it. I used to run time, but I never had.
It would find stuff.
It would find pops.
Well, I take them off too. I take them off, even the ones that
I understand that. But what I'm saying is, it never found anything. It never found Trojans or anything for me. But
you remember. I mean, some people use Spybot Search and Destroy. They still use that. I mean, I use it on the machine.
I still run it every now and then.
Yeah, you can still get updates for it. And you know, I've used it on actually, it was on I think it's on the Ultimate Boot CD. I believe it was. Or was it Hirons? And I got it to work from a boot up CD and it updated, and it found a lot of stuff on this Windows XP machine.
The one issue I've had with the Kaspersky is that you have the GUI interface on it, and then you have you can go and just drop out to a text mode for the CD. I find that the text mode runs faster and it updates faster, but if it hits a problem, it'll ask you, what do you want to do with it? And then you have to say, you know, delete it, clean it, quarantine it, whatever. And then the next time it happens, it has to ask you again. So the GUI interface, right, that's the thing. So the text one is faster if you're there, but run the GUI if you're going to say scan it and go to bed, because the GUI will finish it, do everything for you, and then give you a pop-up of, this is what I found. Whereas the text one won't do that. It asks you every single time it stops it. And so I've done that. I've set it for the text, gone to bed, and then got up in the morning, and it's been 3% and sat there when I expected it to be done. So just something to keep a watch on.
Yeah, I never ran it from the text interface. I always ran it from the GUI.
Yeah, I think you can update it via the text interface and then turn around and switch to the GUI interface. So that may be kind of the best of both worlds.
Anybody ever use Trinity Rescue Disk?
I have it.
But I've used it in the past. I think I used it. Did it have a where you could change the password thing in there? I think I used it for that. But yeah, Stormwatch mentioned that. There's a lot of other stuff out there, and you know, you guys as full-time techs, I mean, you got your set ways of doing things, but there's a lot more stuff out there.
Yeah, I think, you know, just looking at this in the chat room, a lot of techs use a lot of different tools, and it's kind of, you know, what they like, what they use all the time, and I think everybody kind of has their own little kind of set of tools that they walk around with, and none of them is, you know, is one better than the other. It's kind of like the antivirus fight. You know, one day one antivirus would be the top dog, and the next day that same antivirus has dropped down to number three, and something else has come up. So you end up with this fight, and so it's great to have, or at least be familiar with a handful of these, whether it's, you know, Super Anti-Spyware, Trinity Rescue Kit, you know, all of these different applications, and that way you can run them all, or at least a handful of them, against a certain job, and then know that you at least come away clean.
You've got to do that. I don't know that I've ever used Trinity, though. I never heard of it. I'm not sure if I've ever used it.
Yeah,
I'll have to give it a shot.
I'm pretty sure Brian's did a video on that before.
Did he?
I think so.
Well, I know he did the one on what was the other one?
The multi-beat one.
Yeah,
you can put a bunch of different ones.
Yeah,
on. I think Trinity was one of those in there. Can't remember.
So, yeah, you got to hit it with a bunch of stuff, you know, to be sure, and you know, and go do look around sometimes, even, you know, manually.
Yeah, you know, I hear you.
Did you ever, whatever happened to that laptop you were working on with the boot record? Did you do a nuke and pave?
Oh, yeah, it was just time. They it never had been done before. I realized that after getting into the user drives and realizing that it had the old user on it. So, yeah, it was time to nuke pave it, and it works much better. They're happy with it now, so.
Good.
Yeah, you know, at some point you really got to have to know what the limit is, and at some point you just got to throw in the towel and say, forget it, I'm done. Because really, I mean, all of us, we've all already expressed this, that, you know, you walk away going, well, I hope I got everything. And really the only way to know you make sure you got everything, nuke and pave it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because we were talking about that last week, and I was thinking about the conversations that we've had in our little TeamSpeak channel over the years on that specific subject of, you know, throwing in the towel, and you know, and not, and actually, you know, keeping with it and getting it fixed. And you know, for me, because I'm not like you, I don't, my time isn't necessarily worth anything, if you will. I'm not going to be doing anything else, so you know, I can sit there for hours on end, you know, trying to figure this out. And whereas, you know, somebody like you, you know, you don't have that kind of time to devote to a particular machine. And I mean, I agree. I think that if you put a couple hours into it and you haven't got a resolution, as a business owner, you got to make a business decision, you know?
Right. Well, and, not only that, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, and I just, I mean, this has been an argument that's gone back and forth in over the years, and you know, oh, you're not a proper tech if you do a nuke and pave, you know, you got to see to it. Well, I mean, if you're making $80 on a virus removal or whatever it is, you know, infected boot record, you know, and it takes you 5 hours to resolve the issue, you know, how much are you making on this $80 repair?
Well,
And are you necessarily, you know, doing the customer right? You know, so I don't know. It could go either way. I didn't mean to hijack your topic there, but
no, just, but that you, sorry.
Yeah, that's why big companies won't spend a minute on a virus. They're just going to reimage it, like my company.
Oh, sure. Anyway.
Right. And if you're talking about, you know, not being a tech because you're throwing in the towel, okay, are you a tech because of your pride, or are you a tech because you're helping out a customer? And if it's about the customer, then do what's best for the customer, not about your pride. And you know what? If it becomes this, you know, I'm gonna get this virus no matter what, then make an image of the computer.
Oh, absolutely.
Do what you need to do, give it back to the customer, and then spend your off time trying to slay the dragon. But in the meantime, you know, get them their computer back, and mess, you know, that way they have their stuff back. Because chances are, if you spend 5 days, 7 days, and go, guess what? I know I had your computer for a week longer than I expected, but I cleaned it out. They don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they would much rather have their computer back.
Well, the thing is, too, I've generally find that if it's a virus, that removing the virus is quicker and easier for me than doing a nuke and pave. By the time you have to get all the updates back in, get all the software back in, it just, to me, that just takes forever.
When you're connected, it will take forever, right?
Yeah. So it's actually quicker for me to you know, stick with it and find the culprit.
Well, Sure, but I mean, but the last thing you want to do is say it's clean, take it back to your customer. Nope, they got reinfected somehow, and then you get it back again, and you do the same thing. I mean, I'm not saying that that has happened to you or it's going to happen to you. I just, you know, at some point you need to, in my opinion, it's no, don't get me wrong. I will work on slaying the dragon myself, but you know, at some point you got to just do it. And
well, it's going to depend on the type of customer as well, right? I mean, if you're going into a business environment, you're not going to spend any time on it. You're going to image it, boom, done. Put your computer back, you know.
Right, and I don't see a lot of, and this is brings up a point that I was going to throw in earlier, is that I don't see a lot of customers bringing me computers that are completely infected, unless they're, you know, like this last one, this laptop. It was a specialized instance where I manage this, it's a church, and I manage their stuff, and this was the youth leader, and they said, here, this is broken, again. You know, they did the same thing. They wanted to watch the Seahawks game from a couple weeks ago. They Googled online, how do I watch the Seahawks game? Oh, all you have to do is download this video encoder, and then now all of a sudden their computer was hosed. But I don't get people who call me up randomly and say, hey, I heard you work on computers, could you do this? Or pull my name out, because I really work on focusing my business towards, you know, managed solutions, working with corporate people. And if they get infected, then there's definitely a bigger problem than the, just the computer that I'm doing, not doing my job and as getting them antivirus and protection and filtering, content filtering and stuff like that. Most of them don't get infected because I have worked really hard to make sure that they don't, because when they go down, then that's, you know, that's not only just, hey, I can't get on Facebook and look for cute kittens. It's we're actually losing money.
Well, looking for cute kittens is very important these days.
Well, I guess so. It depends on your... I guess it depends on your needs. So I had mentioned something earlier, and I heard Tim say, huh? I had mentioned Skydog. And this is actually really cool. This was actually was passed on to me of, hey, check this out. See what you think. And it was actually just through Facebook. It's skydog.com. And I've already have one on order. It should be in... I think starting tomorrow, sometime between tomorrow and next week. What it is it's a gigabit router that has, it also has an app for your smartphone, but it will, so this, what it says, I'll just read you right from their webpage. It says, Skydog is the first of its kind home networking solution that allows you to powerfully yet simply manage your family's unique digital lifestyle, comprised of two complementary parts, a wireless router and an easy-to-use cloud app for your smartphone, tablet, or PC. Skydog lets you individually personalize the internet access of every member of your family. It provides you with visibility, control, and customize your families. So it actually has three wireless and wired virtual networks in it that you can apply custom configurations to. Maybe you want it to QoS. Maybe you want to block it only, you know, with the hours between, you know, 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. so nobody can get online after that. And then it has this... Then it also has these apps that go on your phone that notify you for whether or not if somebody's trying to get online after the time. So, you know, it's got a firewall and it's an anonymizer and a phishing. It says malware and phishing protection. Anyways, it's $149, and I went ahead and I purchased one because I thought this would be really interesting. I had talked. So probably a couple months ago, probably 6 months ago, I had a client who needed some way to be able to take their network and then implement a kid network, but then be able to shut off that kid network at certain times. I don't know if you remember that. And what we ended up doing was actually, you know, whenever you need to set up another network within a network, we ended up just making another router on another, you know, IP address range. So that way, what he was able to do then is when it's time to go to bed and the kids won't get off the network, he just actually will physically unplug that router. He can stay up. Him and his wife can stay on, but the kids, their network shuts down completely. And I thought this looked really, really interesting because it was a quick way to be able to nice, segregate, man. and make a network, not only for, say, your kids, but maybe put this in a business environment. Maybe you're going to put it at a coffee house or I'm looking at this for... I've got some clients who are apartment complexes and they have resident computers and they want to only allow internet between certain times and they want to do some filtering. So this kind of looked really, really, really cool, and I'm going to take a look at it.
Yeah, I think that looks awesome. The price seems really reasonable as well for the for what it says it does. And, you know, one of the things Stormwatch said in the chat, you know, be interesting to see how well the granular control is, because that's always what you IT guys speak of when you're talking about writers is how granular you can get
right
with your settings. And it sounds like with this thing, you could get it set pretty tight.
Yeah, and I'm to the point of that if somebody gets online, you can be notified on your smartphone or your tablet or I'm hoping to see what this will do. My only complaint right off the bat, first thing I noticed is that I wish it had external antennas instead of internal antennas. I'd like to have more range with it. It is dual band, so you have your 5 gigahertz and your 2.4 gigahertz, both N, so you can have, we're going to have some good signal strength, but without the external antennas, I think you've already hindered the distance this is going to be able to go. For me, I'm upstairs in my office, and my router is actually right behind these monitors that you see me through. And those have to reach downstairs and stuff. Well, they're already external antennas. It's on an outward facing wall. So I may need to do some reconfiguring of my network, just physical reconfiguring of my network to figure out where the best place to put this is so I can test this, because I'm definitely going to try it out and have my kids on one network and me on another, and because I want them to go to bed at night. Now they can switch over to cellular, and now I'm going to have to contact, do something else besides that. But let's say you have, kids who, just have touches or just tablets. You can just turn off the network.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm in.
So it should be coming in. I'll definitely test it out. From Amazon's got 4.7 out of 5 stars out of it. So we'll I'll give it a whirl.
Cool.
We have received we received two emails and a voicemail this week. So we went up like 300% from the week before. It was crazy. We didn't know what to do. So, Mitch, do you have that voicemail?
Yes, I do. And I'm going to play it right now.
Hey there, Geeksters. This is John calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, thanks for the podcast. Love it. Appreciate the time you guys put into it. Just listening to episode 100. Congratulations on that. I'm just going to weigh in on your cloud-based WESH web networks that we were talking about on this episode. You guys mentioned Meraki and Aerohive. Another great one is sort of in the middle. It's a lot less expensive, but still has a lot of the same features. It's called OpenMesh. Check them out at openmesh.com. We probably have about 400 of those APs out spread around. Oh, just about everywhere throughout West Michigan and even a little bit down into Indiana, and it is awesome to be able to control everything from the web, so on and so forth. Just throwing that tip out there. Have a great day and carry on. Bye-bye.
So we got the voicemail from John saying about OpenMesh, and then Liam texted me right away and said, hey, I heard of this product called OpenMesh. You should check it out. So I thought maybe they had talked. So I went ahead and I looked. Go ahead, Fred.
No, go ahead.
Oh, so I looked at this, and what caught my attention right off the bat was the price. And 2 weeks ago, I had mentioned that we at a school use Aerohive, and I thought it was pretty cool. We got the new access points in, and I didn't get a chance to mention this to you, but I thought it was pretty funny. So the new access points came in at the school. The power didn't show up with them. We didn't realize you had to buy power adapters, which was a little odd. They sent me the wrong power adapters. Long story short, I fried one of the power adapters, one of the access points, because they sent me the wrong power adapter, and I plugged a 48-volt power adapter at a 12-volt power supply, access point, fried one of them. The other one worked after they finally sent us that. So it's been now like 4 weeks, and I should have the replacement one and ready to deploy tomorrow. But they were $550 a piece for these access points. This OpenMesh, they're modular hardware, just their plug-and-play ones. From their store, now I haven't done any price checking on this, but from their store, their cheapest one is $55. So openmesh.com, and this is something I'm gonna definitely take a look at, because as a tech, if I get calls, so we have a couple companies where I go out and I deploy a single router to a client, and then at another site, then I install another router for another client, another router. But it's all under one business. Well, what about doing this, where instead of buying, yeah, maybe a little more expensive, rather than spending $36 or something on just your router that you have to configure every time, you just buy one of these. You plug it in, and you're good to go. It matches up, and you apply the same policies across the board. So, $55 for the 150 meg router, $375 for the 300 meg router. So, I don't know. I think I know Liam from Liam Tech says he's going to purchase a couple of these. I may purchase a couple of these just to try them out and see how they work. You know, I'll throw one at my house. I'll throw one at my brother-in-law's house down the way and just say, try it. Play with it. Mess with it. And, you know, the nice thing about cloud-based managed solutions is that you don't – there's no – you know, you're not limited by physicality, which is where – the reason they're moving away from this, because you used to be able to have everything had to be in one building because your controller was physically located in one building. So unless you had some kind of way, whether it's a VPN tunnel back to talk to that controller, you know, you couldn't do anything. But now they've cloud-based it, you can manage your clients all over the place. So kind of, Fred, this kind of, you know what, this, it reminds me of kind of your cameras that you put in that one time for that company.
Right.
So I'm going to check these out. I don't know if you guys have seen these. You know, he mentioned that I had mentioned Meraki, which is owned by Cisco. But those access points, you know, those, and well, they're just antennas. I haven't messed with them too much yet. But those antennas are $200 a piece. So right off the bat, you're looking at, for the cheapest one, you're looking at, you know, around a quarter of the price, and you get the full, you know, the full spread of things. They have internal and external antennas as well.
Very cool.
So they have a, you know, yeah, take a look at them, openmesh.com. They've got some cool stuff. Looking forward to maybe messing with those a little bit more. I don't know if you guys have even mentioned, have worked with these or seen these at all in the past? No? Mitch, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you just shook your head. I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I didn't say anything. But
no. So we did receive some emails. We received an email from Robert Ferguson. He says, Geeksters, I have been repairing computers since 1997. Like Mitch, I work with a full-time job and repair computers as a second job, which I enjoy. I had my shop for 5 years and enjoyed it, but needed insurance, so I took a full-time job. I was happy to find the PodNut shows, and I've listened to the Twitch shows for years, but it's nice to hear other computer techs discussing repair issues. The three of you have great chemistry together. Tim's laugh is contagious, and I catch myself laughing out loud at work. It's good to think that I work alone most of the time. Martin, you do a great job hosting, and I've learned tips from each of you. Keep up the good work, and thanks for sharing your time and knowledge with us. So I thought that was a great letter, and I wanted to thank Robert for that. So Robert, if you're listening, thank you very much for the kind words. And Tim's laugh is contagious. So,
which you're not hearing now because he is having audio difficulties.
I think I'm back now. Am I back now?
Oh, you're back. I am.
Now,
yeah.
What about the audio file, Tim?
Oh, what, we shouldn't bother our listeners with such things. Let's carry on.
I mean, Audacity. Did you didn't lose that, did you?
Why should we bring that to the show? Let's just carry on.
All right, we won't talk. We'll talk about Tim's laughter. It's not contagious today.
Ouch!
All right.
I just ran over my baby toe with my chair. I ran over it with the wheel. It would hurt.
Those are the kind of things that happen when you start to get old, Mitch. You start running over your feet?
And when you're really heavy. Yes.
Oh, that's not good because, oh, wait a minute, I'm really heavy.
Well, but I was talking about me. I'm really heavy.
That's why I keep my feet up at all times whenever I'm scooting around. Works good for me. It's not so good when you're around.
Well, how do you scoot if your feet are up in the air? What, do you have, like, paddles that you push off with or something?
He's just that good.
That's a good point. I never thought about it. That was, never mind. Back to the next email. This is from George, and this is from George, and he's emailed us a couple times in the past regarding just random tech issues. He says, I hope all's well with you. I'm a few episodes behind on Geeksters. I think I'm on episode 99 right now, but I have a couple questions for you regarding OpenDNS. I've heard you talk about using OpenDNS for clients, and it's been something I've been thinking about doing for as well. But it seems to me that for businesses, they want you to use their business service, which is not cheap. But you're trying to use the home product and leaving it at that. Are you just using the home product and leaving it at that? I have a small nonprofit client with 5 to 7 PCs that the director wants to have some web filtering set up, but every option seems to have a fair-sized yearly cost. OpenDNS free would be great, but I don't know if it was kosher to use a business to use it in a business environment. I'm just wondering what your thoughts were and how you're using it. By the way, you're doing great work on the Geeksters. I like Tim and Mitch, but you are but you are why I keep losing. I had to think about that.
There's that way.
You keep the conversation focused without rambling, and that's important, at least for me. I don't have a lot of free time to listen to podcasts, so I expect to get the maximum content from the ones I listen to, and you provide that. Thanks so much for all the work and towards doing that.
He must be listening to some other show.
Yeah, we ramble a lot.
Now, it's nice to get some good emails.
It is nice. So he brings up OpenDNS, and I went ahead and actually contacted OpenDNS today regarding this issue. So OpenDNS has two versions. They've got a home version and a business version. Now, the home version, you can just throw your router. You can just point your router or your whatever, you know, your DNS on your local machine to OpenDNS, call it good, and they'll do some filtering for you. It may not be as granular as you want it, but they will do some filtering. The next one is where you can actually sign up for free for their accounts. And then you can, with those free accounts, what you're able to do then is you're able to go in and be a little more granular with your filtering. Maybe you want to filter all social networking, but you want to, so therefore it gets rid of things like Pinterest and Instagram and Facebook and, you know, whatever. But maybe you want to allow Facebook. So you can say block the category of social media, but then turn around and then whitelist Facebook. Or maybe you want to not block, so they have a category, I think they have a category like guns or something. You know, maybe you want to not block the category guns, but maybe you do want to block guns.com. And you can go in and do that, and you can move around, and it makes it really easy. So if you have a static IP address, it's pretty easy. You just sign up, and then you type in what your static IP address is during the sign-in, and you just give that to them, and you're good to go. If you have a dynamic IP address, which most people do because they're, you know, using some kind of a home system from Charter, from Comcast, from, you know, Cox or Verizon, then on a Windows machine, they have an DNS, OpenDNS updater application that just runs in the task tray. And every so many hours, it just basically does a ping, figures out who you are, you know, what your IP address is. You sign in with your username and password within the application, and it updates OpenDNS for you. So if your IP address were to change, then you can keep your filtering on. What would happen is if your IP address changed, but your filtering was still set to look at your old IP address, filtering stops. Now, unlike other applications, it fails open, so it doesn't block anything anymore. So if you're using OpenDNS and all of a sudden what you had blocked is no longer blocked, make sure that you're not using a dynamic IP address, or even make sure that the IP address is within that OpenDNS has on record, is actually the same one that you are currently on. Now, this is your external IP address. So he asks about business versus home use. So I called OpenDNS today, and I asked him, so what if you have a small business that's 5 to 7 people? You know, what is the rules for that? Well, OpenDNS upsold me, or tried to upsell me today. Their rules are, if you have below 10 people, you can use the home version, they said, is for below 10 people. But if you're in a business environment, they really want you to use the business service. And I said, well, what if they're not all in the same location? So say you have, you know, you have people who travel. Well, then what they want you to do is then buy their umbrella suite that then installs on all the computers. So no matter where you go, the umbrella suite is still managed by the business software, which then you pay for. So can you install or point, you know, your OpenDNS as a business to the free version and just use it that way? Yes, it's not in the regulations. It's not in the agreement, the use form. So they really frown and look down on that. They want you to buy the business one. It's quite expensive. I think the umbrella stat that they had mentioned for the per use was, they said $60 per. So if you have 10 people, now you're looking at $600 for web filtering. At that point, especially if you're all in one office, you may want to look at something like Untangle or another kind of actual physical box that you'd put inside of your network to do that. But as a home user, OpenDNS works really good.
Hmm. Yeah, I've used OpenDNS for a long time, been real happy with it.
Yeah, it's not perfect at all, don't get me wrong, because really you're relying on your router or you're relying on your computer to talk to their DNS servers for filtering. If you go outside of that, then you're not being filtered at all. So, you know, is it perfect? No, it's not. Is it better than nothing? Yes.
Yeah, so a local hardware solution is always going to be best, right?
Of course, because there's no way to get around it, because you're actually proxying it's basically a proxy. Any traffic, no matter what DNS they're choosing, has to go through that filter before it gets out, or through that hardware before it gets out to the internet. It doesn't matter. With OpenDNS, you're actually going out to the internet, asking whether or not you're allowed to go to this site, yes or no, and then being allowed to either view it or not view it. Right. You change your DNS on either your local machine or your router. Now you're no longer asking OpenDNS, and you can go around OpenDNS.
Is that Untangle? Is that free, or is that something you pay for?
I believe Untangle is free. Or at least it used to be. Right. I think there's a subscription service.
I know David was. I've heard Dave Mitch's son talk about Untangle before. He runs it at home, and I looked into it a while ago. But it'll run on a real small. It'll run on a real, you know, small machine, right? Almost like a Raspberry Pi kind of thing.
Oh yeah, you know it. Well, you just need. I don't know if you need two network cards on Untangle or not. I think you do.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. So it looks like. So say you have this. Now I want the pricing page. So say you have 1 to 10 users. Do you qualify for educational? Yes or no. So standard package is $40 a subscription. $50 for a software package, and then you have now your appliances. Those will run pretty expensive. Your U10 appliance is $1,000. Your U10 appliance premium is $1,200. So depending on depending on your needs, you may want to do that. Another option is something like Dan's Guardian. That runs on a Linux box. That doesn't need two NICs. That needs just one network card in, because all the traffic goes into the Untangle box and then back out the same network card. We've ran that at schools before, Untangle Box, Dan's Guardian, and then the behind the scenes we ran OpenDNS as a secondary filter. Dan's Guardian, just like OpenDNS, if it fails to open. So if you are really concerned about filtering, like we were at a school, we were had to be very heightened with content filtering at a school. Failing open may not be the best option to go to. Maybe you want to look at something that fails closed. But in a work environment, if you can just say, I just want people to not be able to surf XYZ while they're at work. And if they do because it fails open, that's one thing. But rules between a private company and rules between governmental companies or even education for students are completely different. And
right.
So check out Untangle, Dan's Guardian. It's just a Linux plugin. You can throw it on a CentOS or Ubuntu server and go that route as well. I've just chosen to go with OpenDNS because it just makes it pretty simple here at my home.
Right. Cool.
The business side of OpenDNS, the business prices are a little expensive. You do get reporting with that, which is one of the nice things. So I get reports every day of who has, not necessarily who's gone where. You can get granular, that costs more money, but you do get a chance to see what sites have been blocked. And it's later on in a couple of emails after that, he had asked, how does he separate, say you have upper management with, you have your employees and you have upper management, and both of them need separate filtering rules. You could get it. That's where it gets a little complicated. That's where you may need to talk to OpenDNS about either getting two rules or saying we're not going to block upper management and we're going to block lower management. Now they both need to be on separate interfaces because they're going to have to go out. OpenDNS is, or if you're going to block, say, via the router, you block one. Your employees via at the router and the upper management. You don't put any blocks on that router at all. You don't redirect DNS. So once you start getting trying to figure out layers, then that gets a little more complicated.
Right.
Not that OpenDNS can't do that. The problem is that at the school, there you have bypass codes. One of the things with the OpenDNS is that the business side is that you get a bypass code. So say you want to go to Facebook, Facebook's blocked. You put in the bypass code, now Facebook is open. The issue is that with one single static IP address out, now Facebook is open across the board. Because now, not just because one person has opened it, what you've actually done is not open it for that one person, you've opened it for the IP address. Now Johnny comes up, sits down at a computer, goes to Facebook. He can now get on Facebook because you know that person over there opened it. Now this person can over there get to it. So right. you have issues with that, and that's where you know when you start doing things like that, that's where you know in a school we have to do things like segregation. You need to segregate the students from the teacher networks, and then you have maybe you want to go with different subnets or even different externally facing IP addresses, and so it gets a little more complicated once you reach that. But that's down the road.
Sounds complicated going to schools and start segregating. Good luck with that.
Well, yeah. Oh. I didn't mean to ramble there on that, but when you start doing that, it gets a little more tricky. So last week we talked about my the tax software, and it was TurboTax. I walked in, I ran that tool, that .NET installer tool that we had mentioned. I'll throw it back. It'll be in the notes again this week. The .network framework removal tool. I ran it. It aired out right away. Not a problem. I rebooted the machine, ran it again. It said no problems. It cleaned it all out. I then ran TurboTax the installer without running their .NET first. Installed just fine. Everything went. No problem.
Nice.
So I was in and out in less than an hour, and most of that hour was because they had I did something and came across Conduit. It's like, I was like, while I'm here, let's fix this. So Malwarebytes found it, and she was running a full scan as I was leaving. But I was like, man, there it's a Conduit again. This one is well, and it was just it was
one installer. Conduit's like Newman. Conduit.
What was interesting about this one is all it had was the Conduit like search bar or something like that. There was no other. There wasn't the YJAM games or the all the other stuff you see along with Conduit. It was just one instance. So I think something must have caught it. They were running the full Norton, you know, everything and the kitchen sink security suite, which may have helped in that instance.
Which means the machine was running too slowly to do
anything. Yeah, it was an i3, and it was an i3, and it was overheating, and it would shut down. But I had talked to them about maybe switching to something a little lighter, but they said, well, they purchased it, and they wanted to keep it, and that's okay. So we had done that. The other thing that this machine was interesting is it was overheating and shutting down. I was doing something with it, and I picked it up, and I felt a lip on the bottom of the machine. I thought that was weird, so I picked it up and looked, and the battery is supposed to slide in at an angle and then snap down, right? So then you slide the back in and then you snap it down, and usually the front of the battery is where the pins interconnect, you know, to make a charge. Sure. It was just the pins were connected. The back was just flapping. And so I thought, well, maybe that's some of the cause of it overheating, is that it's actually trying to jump. Electricity is not fully, you know, being able to cross the planes very well. And she said, ever since I bought this battery, it hasn't. It's overheated and shut it down. So I turned it off, pulled the battery out, put it in all the way, and then snapped it down. And there, it's nice and smooth. Now, let me know if it overheats again. So that may have been the issue that had been causing some premature wear and tear on that computer.
Was this OEM battery, or was it just aftermarket? Was it a good fit?
She called me and said, my battery's dying. I said, pull it out. Look what you need on it, you know, tell me what it is. And she told me, so I looked up on Amazon, said, buy this battery for it. And then she installed it.
I see.
And it had been that way for 7 months, 8 months. I mean, it had just been kind of hanging there by a thread. So we'll see.
Sizzling.
My laptop smells like bacon. So we'll see. Hopefully that this will have to do.
I'm 20. I got one more thing.
Yeah.
Is it my turn?
It's always your turn. Go, Fred. Go, Fred.
I have been, a friend of mine has started making, about a year and a half ago, started making like homemade, all natural dog treats, right? Like little dog biscuits, if you will. And it's a girl I used to work with, a lady I used to work with, and she's struggling with her web presence. And she's selling these things at like local fairs and markets, and she's doing quite well with it, but her online presence was pretty poor. Well, about a year ago, I'd mentioned to her, I was like, yeah, well, you know, if you need help, this is over Facebook. I said, you know, let me know, I'll help you. Of course, I don't know anything about anything, but, you know, she didn't know that. So, fast forward to present day, like last week, and she messaged me and said, hey, you know, can you help me out with a e-commerce site? Well, I had no experience with it at all. I've used WordPress, you know, a little bit. I can fumble my way through it. But I have a good friend of mine who has who sells metal detectors, and he's no web guy either. He figured all this out on his own, and so it's FortBedfordMetalDetectors.com is his site, and he uses software called OpenCart, and it's an e-commerce software, you know, for just like WordPress, except for e-commerce, not for blogging necessarily. So I told her, I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot. So I got it. Well, first off, she had a domain with GoDaddy, or a hosting account. And I said, yeah, we'll just use your hosting account. Well, the problem was she had one of those website builder accounts, you know, where you just, you know, the drag and drop jobs.
Yeah.
Well, that won't work with, you know, I needed cPanel access, you know, like, so, you know, you could, you know, get to the back end files basically. And with that, you couldn't. So I called GoDaddy on her behalf and said, you know, what can we do? And they said, well, with the amount of money that she'd paid, for this, you know, business site builder, whatever they called it, they were able to, credit her and give her 2 years worth of hosting on cPanel.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I, you know, of course, I took all the information and let her. She said, oh, yeah, well, whatever you want to do. And I said, well, if you want to have something custom, this is the only way it's going to happen. So she's like, do it. So I did it. So I installed OpenCart. And for the last, I don't know, about 4 or 5 days, I've been playing with it. Now, I got to tell you, I'm really, really liking it. I will say, it's not nearly as user-friendly as WordPress, although that's kind of an oxymoron. But it does less. Like, for example, in the editor for text editing, you know, if anything you want to do other than make it bold, you've got to code it, you know, in HTML in the source code, which has been great for me because I've been learning a lot of this the last few days. And actually, if you want to see the site, it's dreamingdogbakery.com. And so I'm trying to get it. Like I said, it's a work in progress. It's not done yet. And as a matter of fact, she's just signed up for PayPal, a Advantage account, I think it's called. So basically, when she takes payment through PayPal, you won't, the end user, the client, won't even leave her webpage. It'll process everything through PayPal, but they'll stay right on her on nice. Her page.
Like an iframe.
Yeah, like a what?
Iframe.
I don't know what that is.
That's okay. So go.
Yeah, like an iframe.
All right,
sounds like an iProduct, which I wouldn't know anything about.
No. HTML lesson. So you have a website, and you can view another website within the website via an iframe. So it looks like it's actually pulling. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. And the only thing I'm going to have to figure out is I believe we're going to have to get an SSL for that to do that. So
but not really, because if you're parsing it through PayPal, then you're actually still using PayPal's SSL cert because of you're using their e-commerce, not your own.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'll have to. But the problem is, if you don't have that HTTPS there on that page, people aren't going to want to put their credit card on it.
Right. Well, then, and so depending on the cost, now I know GoDaddy does sell SSL certs. DigiCert's another one, but they're pretty expensive. Another one would be.
It's good, Fred.
It's gone. But yeah.
Well, anyway, so I've got. That's okay. So it's just funny how you go through these and like when you work on these websites, it's like the littlest little thing. Like for example, like on these on the specific products, right? She didn't want the price displayed because like on these bandanas, there are different prices for each one. So to get rid of the price, like. It, you know, you got to go in there and change all these codes out, and it's been quite a interesting adventure, but it's been a lot of fun, and I really enjoy doing it.
This looks really good, Fred.
Good job.
Thank you. And the banner, she's got a great logo. I didn't do that, by the way. She had actually paid a professional designer to do these logos, which I think they did a great job. However, if you'll notice I call it the second banner. The banner that has little watercolor dogs looking up in the sky, I actually did make that banner. That was mine. So,
very nice.
There's my my creativity level.
Now, you know, we hear a lot about websites, and if you listen to a lot of the Twit stuff, they talk about Squarespace. Now, how does OpenCart compare to something like Squarespace?
Well, I don't use Square. I've never used Squarespace.
Me neither. That's why I was asking you. I assume.
Oh, yeah. Neither one of us use it. So we're all both experts. No, what I understand about Squarespace is that it's almost like the GoDaddy business builder. You know, they have pre-designed templates, and it's basically you drag and drop your content. I understand. I think with Squarespace, though, you can also go into HTML and CSS and make changes, I think is the way I understood it. Because, yeah, I listen to, Twit a lot, too, and they always have and a lot of people love it. The only negative thing, and I've never experienced it, and I don't know this, but one of our, Donald, you know, who's been on the show quite a few times, Donald Sayers, he has mentioned that things load slowly on it. Now, I don't know.
Squarespace?
Yeah.
Well, so, it's free.
No, it's not free.
Well, you can get a free account through Squarespace.
I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. Mm-hmm. That's a big sponsor of all.
No, there's no free. They'll give you like 30 Twit. Days free.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Never mind.
Yeah, no, it's not free. It's, I want to say...
They're kind of pricey, too, I believe.
Well, no, actually, it really isn't. It really isn't that bad. It's not bad if it's for somebody who's just doesn't want to do... All they want to do is the drag and drop. It's really not bad because it's hosting. Right. It's the whole nine yards. I wouldn't do it, but that's just me. But with this OpenCart, it's out of the box, very powerful. Now, it's certainly not for everybody because there is so much customization that you really kind of got to do to really personalize it. And a lot of that, like I said, is in CSS and in HTML. And, basically what I've done is I'll just Google, they've got great forums, OpenCart communities is really pretty big. And there's, I found the answer to every question I've asked, and somebody will post up the code and where to find it. And you just go through FileZilla and you go there and, you know, copy paste basically. So
that's cool.
Yeah. And, the back end of it is extremely powerful, gives you all kinds of information on, you know, who's visiting your site and from where, and out of the box, it's set up to have where people can sign up for an account, and you don't, it's all done. You don't have to do anything. So I'm impressed. Of course, you know me, I get distracted by shiny things, so never really follow through with anything, but...
Shady Christmas.
But with this, I kind of have to because this is kind of her business, and I'm really and also with the SEO, it's kind of in the back end on the products page. It's got a lot of really strong SEO sections to it, which I'm working with and trying to learn a little bit too. So I'm very pleased. And if anybody has any questions about it or wants to know, what I've learned about it, certainly shoot me a line and I'll be happy to help you out. If I was going to set up any kind of e-commerce site, this is exactly what I would use.
Yeah, I helped set up an e-commerce site at the very beginning of my hosting for a client, and it's still there. But I'm basically, if you go to their website and you choose something, it enters it into a PayPal cart, and I've implemented. I had to go through and assign within their PayPal account all of the items individually and get all the codes individually and then create... basically just create in WordPress blocks, columns, and put in all of the codes individually. That was kind of a big pain. And so this seems like it's probably a whole lot easier for somebody who needs to just, set up a small e-commerce site.
It is. Yeah. And then I'm just using the default theme or whatever you want to call it, which is pretty basic, but they've got you can theme it just like you can with WordPress. There's themes galore, and they have all kinds of they call them extensions or modules, whereas in WordPress you call them plugins. There's a bunch of those too. So I mean, you can really get pretty granular. Okay, Fred.
Are you growling there? That's awesome. Awesome, awesome. Oh, cool.
So, if anybody needs any dog treats, go to there and, of course, you can't buy them today.
Yeah, don't buy them today.
Give it a week. Get all your dog treat needs.
But go there, make a list. And then think about it, and then when Fred comes out next week,
there is a cart. You can add it to your cart, and then.
But don't clean out your cookies.
That's right.
just hang tight.
That was it. I just thought I'd bring that up because I was very happy with it.
Good. No, it looks good. I'll get it. All right. Well, cool, Fred. You mentioned if people had any questions about that, how can they get a hold of you?
Probably the easiest way is just fred@jetspeedit.com.
Very nice. Very nice. Hey, Mitch, if you want to send us an email, we got good emails, we got good voicemails. What's the best way they can get a hold of us?
Well, we like those voicemails. We thank you for sending them or calling us up. Voicemail is 7076 Podnut, and you can email us or me, and any of us will get it. Geeksters@podnuts.com.
Nice. Tim, you still with us?
Yeah, buddy.
Awesome, awesome. And if you want to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. I am in Like Tim in the Podnuts forums. You can email me. I am tim@realpcrepair.com.
Nice. And I'm Martin Obando, obandocomputing.com. I'm Martin at Obando Computing. Geeksters, you can get me there. Maskill in the forums. Maskill in the chat. Guys, it's been a great one. It was lovely to have you out. Maybe we'll see you see you about every 3 months.
But I think it's about every 2 months, actually.
Nice.
Historically. Hey, can I plug one more thing real quick?
All right.
I'm doing a YouTube channel. It's on my flying adventures, and you can find it at Fred the Pilot on YouTube.
Nice. I watched the first two. It made me nervous when the first one was you driving, because I'm not sure you knew how to drive. I just need... You should have started it with, this is normally not what I do, but I'm going to give it a shot.
The content's been pretty thin yet, but I have ideas to get to ramp it up a little bit. So,
well, I saw the second one and was impressed at how far you go in one day, or in one shift. So guys, check it out. It actually is pretty cool to see what Fred does. And I always respected you, but now I have more respect for you. And now I understand why you're not always here, and we give you bad time. El Chupacabra strikes again. All right, guys. Have a great Geeksters fiscal week. We'll see you next one. Bye-bye. Yep.